The team's actually quite sick, you know.
Hello, and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFello.
Hello.
Well, what a week it's been in football-ish. It's been a lot of individual games, isn't it, rather than like whole big blocks of Saturday, isn't it? Lots of football going on. It's like most season, it takes about as long to end as a Lord of the Rings film, doesn't it?
Which is like hours and hours.
You sort of think, oh, this is the end right here. No.
It's not. It's like a Leonard Cohen song.
It goes on forever.
It's been the kind of time of the season where you watch Shrewsbury.
Yes.
And Rochdale.
Yes.
And, you know, other teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because it's the only game, it's literally the only game of football that's on.
Yeah, and when you're tweeting it, you're thinking, I'm glad I'm tweeting this because now I don't have to work out whether I have to say Shrewsbury or Shrewsbury.
Yes, that's very true. That's
and unfortunately,
point.
When you come around to being on a podcast, you have to make that choice.
Yeah, no, you do, I do. But it's Shrewsbury, though.
Oh, well, okay. Well, us here on Team Shrewsbury will say otherwise.
Are you on Team Shrewsbury?
No, he's going to come out with some weird Sunderland accent version, isn't he?
Yeah.
In that case, I'm going to hold it back. I'm going to give neither of you the satisfaction.
Shrewsbury. We always do that.
Shrewsbury.
Yes.
Shrewsbury.
Actually, we pronounce it Shra.
They call themselves Salop. Don't they? S-A-L-O-P.
Yes.
That's their hashtag that they use.
Yeah.
So which I'm assuming is some kind of hyper-local lingua franca in Shrewsbury.
I always thought it was the contraction of Shropshire.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of that. Yeah.
It was Northants and things like that.
I do follow a Shrewsbury fan.
Do you?
I follow him because he used to be massively into his Bundesliga. But he also happens to be a Shrewsbury fan. That's his English team, his Shrewsbury Town. So he often tweets about them, and then he uses the hashtag Salop whenever he is tweeting about the Shrews, because that is their nickname. Shrews, not, you'll notice, Shrews.
It's a low blow, isn't it? I'm still not getting involved. You can't drag me into this.
I wouldn't say it was low. I'd say it was killing blow. It was killing blow. It was decisive.
Do you know, we've got far, far, far more juicier things to debate on this half hour of football conversation than the pronunciation
than my correct pronunciation
Shrewsbury.
Shrewsbury.
We'll be arguing about which goes on the scone first now. Next.
No,
I don't know what a scone is. What's odd language. We'll just stick to football.
God dear. Yes.
God, blimey, that escalated quickly.
Well, obviously it was a cup final weekend as well, and Man United played Chelsea, lost to Chelsea again in the FA Cup final, 1-0 again, like they did 11 years ago. Did you watch it, guys?
Yes, I did. I didn't analyse it.
No.
I just sat there and watched it.
Good. I only watched it as well. I'd had a barbecue and a few beers, so I just watched it. I didn't analyse it.
We had a street party.
Yeah.
Because
there was some other event, wasn't there?
Something else going on. I didn't watch whatever that event was. But between 1 o'clock and kickoff, there was beers had. I would say I watched it. And there was little analysis done.
I must admit, it is a masterstroke by the FA to push the start time of the FA Cup to 5:15, because now the games seem a lot better because we've been able to have two more hours of drinking before the kickoff starts. It was never going to be the most glittering of affairs, was it?
A cup of nails, I believe, was the expression that we used.
Yes, we did use that.
We said it was going to be a bag of nails, didn't we?
Yeah, and it was pretty dire, but it was to be expected. That was the game that was always going to be set out to be played.
And it was also accompanied by the all-too-hilarious protestations of Jose Mourinho, stating that his team had all the possession and... you know, all the chances and went for it, and Chelsea were defensive, which is just if United had scored early in the game, then they would have played exactly the same as Chelsea played. And I mean, everybody knows this, and I suspect even Jose was sort of like saying it with a kind of yada yada yada. Yeah, I'm saying this because you expect me to say this, and so you can all say what a hypocrite I am, and I don't care because you know.
I do think though that he should say these things with a very tall hat on and a cloak that he has draped over his arm, and with a boo track going on in the background, you know, so that he can. Just completely panto it up.
His villainy is really obvious now, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, it's a tactic that he deploys quite a lot because you know it takes the pressure off the fact his team lost, and he does it all the time. You know, whenever there's a problem, you know, he either kicks off in the dugout or he'll say something that somebody thinks is slightly controversial, and then everyone's talking about that and not about the game.
Is Mourinho a disruptor?
Well, he's an example of hyper-normalisation, isn't he? He just opens his mouth and says stuff that is completely contradictory to stuff that he said earlier.
Yeah, you know, so all things we've seen.
So he'll defend his players for being defensive and playing a defensive line and because it wins him games and it wins him trophies. But then at the same time, he'll then criticise opposition players for doing exactly the same tactics. Yeah. In order for them to win trophies, and he'll do that. It's classic non-linear warfare. It's a very, very, it's very much of the time. You never know where you are with Jose Mourinho. You never know what he's going to say next. And I suppose the idea is he feels it keeps everybody guessing, and keeps him in the job for as long as possible.
Yeah, and what's reported generally in the press tends to be, this is what he said, and there's very little analysis about him. And it's not unless you listen to podcasts and talk shows and stuff that you actually get people pointing out the contradictions in what he said. Most people just see the headline and go, "Oh, well, then he must be right," unless they dig into it a bit more. But I think he's just media savvy, and I think that he clearly has shown across his career that he can get the best out of players. Didn't do too well at that on Saturday, but you know, it was still a close run thing, and he'll continue to be successful. And if that's a tactic he uses to get the best out of his players or to move the attention off them, then you know, it's fair enough. And it's very, very amusing.
Also, Bayern lost the cup final as well on the same day.
They did, despite my thinking, like most people thought that this would be a bit of a procession.
Yeah,
but actually, they lost
3-1
to Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah.
And an extraordinary football match, I have to say. Well, let us start by saying Bayern hit the woodwork twice. So, yes, could have been very different. But Niko Kovac, the Eintracht Frankfurt coach, I think got it absolutely right, spot on with the tactics. He played good transition football. They did sit quite deep. They did invite Bayern on them, but they defended extremely well. They defended set pieces extremely well. Only conceded the one goal. Ante Rebic, who's a Croatian striker who will be going to the World Cup squad with the Croatia. I don't know whether he features that much. 24 years old. He's had a really good season for Eintracht under Kovac. Kovac played him when he was under 21 and when he was national team coach. And he scored two cracking goals.
Yeah.
But the real climax to the final was indeed in injury time when it was 2-1. And Bayern are really piling on the pressure by this point, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And there is a corner. And it's 4 minutes of injury time. We're probably in minute two of the 4 minutes. The ball comes in. There's a melee for the ball. And in the meantime, Kevin Prince Boateng of Eintracht Frankfurt kicks Javi Martinez. Javi Martinez falls over. There's a shot. There's a save. It goes out for a corner. And the Bayern players surround the referee, insisting that there's got to be a penalty for that kick. And the referee is a chap called Felix Weyer, and on his 37th birthday, and he runs over to the monitor to have a look at it. And like, you know, we did catch the replay before, because normally you don't see a replay until after the VAR.
Mm.
But sometimes what happens is that, and I think the broadcasters are savvy to this, is they're not supposed to, but they don't wait for the VAR to be called in. They just quickly, if they can, get a replay in.
Mm.
So we saw the replay of it, and like, I was looking at it thinking, yeah, that looks really unfortunate. He's not really intended to kick him but he has kicked him and is in the penalty area. And, you know, I can't see that not being a penalty. And a ref went over there and he didn't give the penalty. He looked at it and he just didn't give it. And after the game, everybody thought it was a penalty, including the Eintracht coach, including Kevin Prince-Boateng.
Really?
They all thought, I thought for sure he was going to give a penalty. And he didn't. And then by this point, Bayern get another corner. And by this point, Sven Ulreich, the Bayern goalkeeper, is an outfield player by now. Eintracht once again defend the corner. And the striker, or the player, Mijac Gucinovic,
mm-hmm.
he is the last man with the ball. And he runs 70 yards all the way up the pitch with it, with Mats Hummels desperately trying to catch up with him. Mats Hummels, slow, listeners. Mats Hummels is slow, okay? And he scores 3-1.
Wow.
And that's it. I mean, there's no restart because everyone goes batshit crazy.
Yeah.
And the Eintracht players, the Eintracht coaches and the subs all run onto the pitch. You know, there's fans, they're running onto the pitch. I mean, it's pandemonium. I mean, it's 30 years since they won a trophy, a major trophy. They've won the Bundesliga 2, but that's a great trophy, but, you know, Bundesliga 2.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is proper success. And they did it. And it was amazing. And you only, like, this afternoon, Kicker magazine pinned down Felix Weir and said, look, you know, come on, why didn't you give the penalty? Everybody says it was a penalty. And he just said, look, I looked at it again. And he said, but look, I looked at the way that Javi Martinez fell down, and I looked at the way that Kevin Prince moved his feet, and it just didn't work for me. For me, there wasn't that intensity. I just didn't like the way that he fell down there. For me, there wasn't sufficient intensity in the kick. This is poorly translated. He just said, I'm just not going to give the goal. The penalty.
Good for him. I mean, it's brave if he gives it. It's brave if he doesn't give it.
Incredibly brave.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Bayern Munich, for Christ's sake.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't... Normally, that's just not what happens at all. And I thought, we're going to want extra time here. It's going to go 2-2, extra time, and Bayern will end up winning.
Yeah.
Because Bayern.
Yes.
And that's not what happened at all. And now Niko Kovac, the Eintracht coach, is off to manage Bayern Munich. So, but that team that he's developed over the last 2.5 seasons is really good. And it's really good that they've got something tangible to show for it. Because they'll all get atomised now. They'll all get sold off.
Yeah.
There's talk about players going here and there already. And so it's nice to see them actually, if they are going to lose that team and they're going to sell those players off, that they actually managed to achieve something tangible. Mm. Like, they had like tens of thousands of people in the town square on the Sunday. Just insane. I mean, really going for it in terms of celebrations. You can't blame them.
That sounds a lot more interesting than the English FA Cup final.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually. Now that you mention it. I mean, the English FA Cup final had the decency to end just before the start of the German Cup final.
I think that's what I was watching it.
I started paying much more attention to the English FA Cup final in the last 10 minutes because really I thought, I don't want another game. Come on, Chelsea, come on. I want to be able to switch over and watch the other game, which I guess I would have done. But
it's the end of the season now, so we've got cups being sorted out, relegation playoffs and things, and promotion playoffs. But also, of course, we've got the World Cup. And the two overlap, and so if you're not interested in anything left in the season, then obviously you're going to be getting into the World Cup, especially if you've got your Panini album and you've already bought loads of packets of stickers and you're putting them slavishly into there. But I don't know. I haven't checked. I don't own a Panini album, but I presume that the squads are correct. There's not an embarrassing number of people who aren't there.
I wouldn't know, but I wouldn't mind betting that Joe Hart and Jack Wilshere are in those England Panini albums.
Yeah, I would imagine
albums.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't answer that question. My son, we were in the shops the other day, he was going, but look, it says the album's free. I could just get the album. It's free. Look, it says, just take one. And I was like, no, because the packets cost like, you know, a quid each and you get like 4 or 5 in it.
They're giving the album away for free.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm free.
The first one's free.
The first one, the rest, and then they jack up the price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just to get you hooked.
Learning from the best, aren't
they? No, but come on. The album's free. You don't have to buy the stickers.
No, you don't.
There's lots of little squares there. You can just put whatever you like in them. This is a chance for you to be creative, or anyone to be creative. Get the free album, go home, and then just fill it in however you want it to fill it in.
Just draw them.
Yeah. I mean, you could actually, if you wanted to, if you're feeling a bit flush, you could splash out on a set of those A4 sheets that are all like marked up into little adhesive labels, and you could make your own stickers. Stick whatever you like down there.
He's describing his childhood. he's reliving childhood trauma.
But it's okay to say this now.
We should go.
You should be paying us for this.
Thanks for listening. We're all going to go now.
You could do that.
You could.
You could do that. You could spend 150 quid completing it.
Yeah, well, hey. Hey, you know, I mean, it's those sort of make do and mend things that will get us out of austerity, isn't it?
That's true.
Yeah,
That's true.
FA showed us what to do when they gave us the launch video for the squad, didn't they?
They did.
They could have gone for some flashy CGI thing.
No.
What they did was they gave a couple of urchins a mobile phone, and that was it. They said, get on with it and just say these names out. And it was brilliant, wasn't it?
It was brilliant. I thought it was brilliant.
What did you think of it?
It was very Nike.
I thought it looks like my son made this video.
Yeah,
that's
and you'd love that. You'd have pinned it on your fridge, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yes,
if you could do that with the video.
With the video, yeah. I don't know. You have to nail my phone under the fridge. I don't know. Anyway,
yeah.
I thought it was. Yeah, it was. I wasn't quite prepared for the way that was presented. I don't want to be disparaging, because you know it's good to see that they're doing something different. It could have been old stuffy and FA, couldn't it?
Yeah.
But the reality is it wasn't, and it's maybe it might bring in a few more younger fans.
Maybe.
Definitely. Yeah. I liked it. I thought it was glorious, actually. I thought it was charming and a very really nice way to engage.
Yeah.
It was really, really good. And I'm quite surprised that the FA have done it. I mean, somebody suggested that perhaps there was a bit of Nike in this. Because it reminds me of that London advert that they did about with lots and lots of kids playing different sports in London.
Yeah.
Which is really, really good advert. Very, very authentic.
Mm.
I mean, arguably too authentic, but only if you really must insist on not liking it. If you just, if you really want to find a reason for not liking that video, then you can just say it was too authentic.
Yeah, that's it. That's your free answer this week.
I thought it was a glorious way to introduce the squad, and I really really liked it.
Mm.
I'm pretty certain that there was a. Because Nike's relationship with the England national team now is such, I think that they might well have had a hand in its production.
Okay, well, let's quickly go through the squad. We won't go through every player individually, but we will go through the choices and the omissions that stood out for us.
Mm.
We'll have a look in goal, and they went for Pickford and Buckland and Nicky Pope, and obviously Joe Hart, the aforementioned Joe Hart, not going.
No.
What do we think about that?
I think that I was a bit disappointed, actually. The media made so much about Hart not going. I mean, to be honest with you, when I was looking at the squad list, I just got to Pickford, and I was just delirious with joy. I was just so happy. It's funny, actually, on that video.
Yeah.
They don't make a reference to the fact he plays for Everton. There's a Sunderland quip in that. There's someone in a red and white shirt that kicks at the goalkeeper, and he says, like, up the Mackhams or something like that. It's like he's never left. And I think there's a lot of Sunderland supporters, they just hold him in such high regard, because he is kind of one of our own. And I was just really pleased to see him in there. Mm. So, and he thoroughly deserves it as well.
Definitely a talent. Terry, I mean, Hart, if he had gone, he wouldn't have been first choice, would he?
No, I don't think that's the argument, isn't it? He would have been second or third choice. And how much value there is in having him in there being third choice, given his experience and given his former place, that it's too much of a fall from grace. This is where the coach has to make an assessment about the man.
Hmm.
If Joe Hart was a different kind of guy, then maybe he said, well, look, it's good to have him around. He'll, add experience and maybe some wisdom. Mm. But maybe they just didn't feel that was the case. Maybe they felt that Joe Hart wouldn't take it very well. And that's not a criticism of his character. I can't blame him at all. He's a pro, and it will hurt that he's not going. It will hurt an awful lot. I mean, it's a big statement about what's happened to him.
Mm.
Yeah. It may well be that an awful lot of chickens are coming home to roost. And maybe things that he's kind of thought, no, I can get past this, I can do this. And now you know, this is a bit of an ultimate ignominy. Yeah. You know, he's been dropped from the England side, which has been kind of defined his career. Yeah. And obviously there'll be big, you know, problems with sponsors and stuff like that, which are, you know, account for a lot of his income. And these are serious matters, and so yeah. it's tough.
It is tough, but I think it's the right call for that squad. Yes. Definitely.
Yes.
I suppose it is a problem when you do set yourself out and you are the goalkeeper at Manchester City, arguably the biggest club in the country at the moment, and you know you're basically farmed out on loan.
Yeah. Mm. First thing the manager wants, the new manager wants coming, yeah. not just a new manager, Pep Guardiola.
Yeah.
Almost bordering on legendary manager, you know, at this point in his career, and he's still got so much more of his career yet to come.
Yeah.
And the first thing he wants to do is drop yeah. the long-standing keeper who is also England's number one.
Yeah.
And it's really gone south for him ever since then. And it didn't work yeah. out at Torino. I mean, I think he was popular enough, but not in that kind of way, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
He was popular because he was a trier, because he kind of worked hard, but not necessarily because he was necessarily any good. And obviously at West Ham, well,
I wonder over time how much of an effect being dropped by Pep actually had on him. Well, I suppose we won't know until he writes a book. Yeah. But I think that might have, given the decline you've just described, I wonder whether that really did hit him hard, and it might take him a long time to get over that.
Mm. Yeah, but I suppose a lot of these things, though, is that you're going to be the last person to be able to give a judgment on your own performances.
Mm. This is very true.
It's very difficult to have that whole self-awareness. Mm. And especially with any position on the football field,
mm.
it's so much about confidence.
Yes.
The skill doesn't go away. You know, you may lose a bit of pace, or injuries mm. may affect the way you play. But really, I mean, it's the confidence that you see in mm. the player, and that's what most managers go on when they're selecting a player to start even
mm.
Or to be in their squad. It's the influence they have on themselves and on each other.
Absolutely.
We often hear about players having bad attitude or the fact that you've got to try and fit him into a squad, and often it's these players, usually outfield players, usually creative players, are targeted when a team is performing badly mm. because they have, in inverted commas, the wrong attitude. Usually because they're so annoyed with their own game that it is seeping out into other people as well.
Yeah.
Of course, this is just part of football, isn't it?
Yes.
People are dropped all the time. This mm. Joe Hart is now in a long line of goalkeepers that were seem to be the successor to Shilton. No one really has been able to fill that, really. Yeah. I mean, even Seaman was...
I thought maybe Seaman is the closest to it, but
yeah.
I mean, conceivably, I know what you're saying. I mean, it's just, for Joe Hart, you just got the impression that there was more to come from him.
Mm.
Yeah.
But, I mean the story is, from people who know more about goalkeeping, is it's an issue with technique on the high ball, much like David Seaman had in the latter yeah. end of his career. That's where Joe Hart's going wrong, and he's not been able to pick it up. He was dropped by Pep because of his distribution, because yeah. Pep wanted wanted to sign Manuel Neuer, but couldn't. So that's a little bit unkind, because, you know, goalkeeper distribution, yes, all right, that's a very, you know, anything from 2015 onwards, goalkeepers have to do that, but I don't know, there's still a lot of goalkeepers that aren't that good at that. But I think at his age, I forget how old Joe Hart is, but he's still a young man, youngish man for a goalkeeper.
Mm.
You would have felt that he would have gone on for a while. But yeah, another in the line of goalkeepers it's funny how that whole Shilton, we're of that age where we yeah. kind of look back and think of Shilton,
mm.
and then that's the kind of gold standard. And every subsequent goalkeeper has fallen short of that. Maybe we need to reevaluate our expectations of England goalkeepers, if that's the case, because Shilton retired in the early 90s.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, considering the length of a goalkeeper's career,
yeah,
the period of time that we've seen them playing for England or involved in the England setup, and we've seen the England goalkeepers, and if you're not number one, your period in that squad is even less. I mean, mm. you look at that time when Shilton was coming out of the England team, and we were looking for replacements, and it was like David Seaman was up there, Nigel Martin was mm. up there as well, mm. Tim Flowers as well. They were jostling for these positions.
All great goalkeepers.
We thought we had an embarrassment of riches there. Mm. But none of them really, apart from David Seaman, were really held on to that spot for any real length of time. And then you go into the 2000s, you've got Paul Robinson, he was in there for
then that. Then that scene in Croatia happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rob Green, you know.
Rob Green, yeah. God, yeah.
Yeah, and then first game at a World Cup, and then all of a sudden it all goes tits up. But, yeah. And then you've got David James interspersed in between there. And the amount of things that went wrong with his career is this guy who should have been.
Yes.
Everything.
He was drawn to too many howlers, wasn't that? I think that was that's what the narrative was at the time. The reality was he was a brilliant goalkeeper.
He had two problems. Well, first thing, he had to cope with being an England goalkeeper, but he also had to cope with being a Liverpool goalkeeper. So these were two things that he obviously had the ability.
Yes.
And he obviously had the presence for it because he stuck around for a long time. His England career is probably the longest one since Shilton.
And yet we tend not to think, doesn't always immediately spring to mind.
Well, I don't think, because he never had that longest stretch.
Yeah, he was in and out, wasn't he?
So, we spent a long time talking about goalkeepers.
Yes,
we're not really going to talk about that too much more, I don't think. All right, have a look at the defence. The defence, there seems to be a lot of right backs.
In that
squad. And if he's looking to play three at the back, he's probably going to have to convert some of those people are going to have to play as centre backs.
Yeah.
It seems a bit of a waste of time having Kyle Walker there with his pace and then play him as a third centre back.
But I think that's what he was going to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think he's going to play him. But I also think he's got Delphin at full back, but he might well play Delphin in the midfield as well, in addition to.
Yeah.
I think that those guys they're there. Well, they've had great seasons, in fairness. But I mean, they've also, you know, they've also got that versatility that I think he's looking for. So.
Yeah, Harry Maguire is a good name to have down there, I think, anyway.
I think so. I think he's had a cracking season.
Yeah, and Stones as well. I mean, Stones, I know, has got a lot.
Stones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Phil Jones.
Phil Jones gonna Phil Jones, I believe.
Yeah. And I think he showed up in the cup final. What Phil Jones brings to
events. Yeah, but I mean, this is the hand that has been dealt. I mean, it's difficult to think of any other centre halves that you'd immediately leap to mind that you would bring in their stead. I think is there unless there's.
Well, no, and I think this is the whole thing about the squad, isn't it? I think that you look at it and you see the occasional names that have been. Omitted. Look at the midfield, and the two names that are being talked about as the ones being dropped are Jack Wilshere and Adam Lallana. John Joe Shelby's name has appeared on a few people's feeds as someone who was a bit of an outlier. But I think you can't really look at that midfield and think that there is anyone who is there not on merit. I don't think so, anyway.
No, I think the only question mark that you might have would be Ruben Loftus-Cheek on the basis of his lack of experience.
Yeah,
and he's only is it only one actual game that he's played for England, or is it perhaps two?
Mm.
But I mean, he's been involved in the England setup for a very long time. Yep. Gareth Southgate presumably knows him very well. In the time, I mean, he was spent quite a bit of time out injured this season, but he has been outstanding for Crystal Palace. So it's a win for Palace to have him in there. Yeah. I know he's a Chelsea player, but it's a win for Palace to have him in there. So that's probably the only one that you might look at and think, well, hang on. But I mean, you know, I'm disappointed that Lallana is not in there because I like Lallana. I like watching him play.
Yeah.
I like watching him play for England, and I'm really sad that he's not going to be there. I'm not arguing with the choice, but.
He was injured for a long period of time, and then he came back in a reserve team match and kung fu kicked someone in the face, didn't he? So you can understand why people might be reticent to have him around. But I think my take on the squad is that you've got to go with the team you've got, not the team you want. And I think that he has tried to shake it up a bit with some of the youth he's brought in there. So I think there's some really bold decisions in there. And there's a lot of players, as you said, that that have been part of the England setup for a very long time. Alexander Arnold's been there at every level for England.
Yeah.
Really bold moves. It'd be nice to see something a bit more fresh up front, I think. Kane and Vardy, mainstays, and probably only one of them's going to get to play.
The pick of attacking players was I mean, Kane and Vardy, you cannot leave them out. I mean, there's no
chance. Their
form's just amazing. Mm. And you say that only one of them will play, and which I think you are right there. But I can't see why not, because I think Kane is a perfect number 10.
Yes.
I think he really is. And the fact that he scores so many goals playing in that number 10 role is even better. But I think he can easily play off Vardy. And I'd love to see them. I think this to me has the makings of Beardsley Lineker.
Yeah.
Yes.
Really
yeah,
does. No,
that's a great call. Yeah, that could. That would be amazing if that.
Yeah. I mean, if it could work out, they could make an ordinary team look very, very good, which is what Beardsley and Lineker did.
Yes. Kane is an exceptional footballer, an exceptional goal scorer by any objective standards and at any level.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's easy to be dismissive of England because they are generally so terrible in these tournaments and there's no reason to assume why they won't be just as terrible with this one. But, you know, any opposition coach is going to be derelict in their duty if they don't take any team with Harry Kane seriously.
Yeah.
And that certainly goes also for Raheem Sterling as well, who's been on fire in terms of your attacking form.
Certainly, yeah.
And even though he's not been at it quite so much this year, but Dele Alli, I think, is a phenomenal player.
Yes.
But I concede that this year perhaps it's not been so great for him, but if he brings something to the party, then...
Yeah, it's difficult, because Tottenham have by no measure had a bad season.
No.
But Dele Alli hasn't... I think maybe the focus has been on him perhaps a bit too much.
Yeah.
And people are looking at him to produce stuff that he's not likely to produce week in, week out for Spurs. The one inclusion from Tottenham that I wasn't surprised about, but I looked at and thought, well, it's disappointing we've got no one better there, is Eric Dier. Now, Eric Dier has been a great player for England since coming in, but he's not improved, I don't think. And this season, he's had a poor season. And there are other people, well, they're not English, but there are other people in that Tottenham midfield who are a lot better than him.
Mm.
And all right, he can play at centre-half, not very well.
Yeah.
But if you need him to cover at centre-half, things are we're in real trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying about Dier. I mean, I like Dier. I've always liked Dier as a player. Exactly what you're saying. I agree that he's not kicked on and improved. I mean, this is not a great squad.
No.
But, I mean, it's not a terrible squad.
No.
But the issue with England isn't really necessarily the quality of the players. The issue with England is that they just seem to just completely freeze up and can't even get the basics right when they're playing in these tournaments.
Mm.
If Gareth can overcome that, then this will be one of the best England squads since 98.
Yeah, I think that is the problem, though, is that central line, because central midfield, we're almost certainly going to be starting with Dier and Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
Two quality players.
Yeah, but they're not inspirational, are they? You look at them and go, oh, brilliant, they're in there.
No.
Yeah, something missing there.
Yeah, exactly. If Milner was in this squad, would he be the one on the bench, or would one of these two guys be out there? And if that's the case, if he'd be like first choice, then you've got to start thinking, bloody hell, we've got a real shortage of talent here.
Yeah. Mm.
And I can see why he's not gone for Wilshere, because Wilshere just hasn't done it.
No.
And those semi-finals against Atletico Madrid were really the final nail in the coffin, because Arsenal improved immeasurably when he went off.
Mm.
And, you know, it's even the most one-eyed Arsenal fan or Jack Wilshere lover will look at that and say he's not having a great season.
I would disagree with that. I'd say Wilshere's had a great season considering his starting point at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, he was playing in the early rounds of the Europa League and in the League Cup. And by the end of it, he'd been put back in, very much back into the fold. But yeah, I mean, he's clearly short of what we imagined that he was going to be. He was supposed to be that guy in the middle of that England midfield, pulling the strings, and it just totally hasn't happened. And it would be foolhardy to another manager would have brought him along. I hate to say it, but I think his predecessor would have brought him along.
Yeah,
and that would have been a mistake.
Yeah,
And I think that Gareth has made the right choice. Unfortunately, I'm sure it was a very painful choice, because, you know, Gareth Southgate will know all these players. He's been involved in the England setup for many years now.
Yeah.
And he'll know these lads.
Yeah.
And it must be painful for him to have to drop particularly a guy like Wilshere, who was destined to be one of the greats. But yeah. I mean, it looks like he might well have missed out on
injuries that. Again.
Injuries, yeah. No, I'm not blaming him at all. He's been unlucky. Yeah,
yeah.
Rashford and Welbeck are in there.
Yes. I love me some Welbeck.
What Welbeck? I love Welbeck.
Yeah, everybody loves Welbeck.
Yeah. That was the bit I got. I started this list of players with Pickford, and by the time I got to Welbeck, I was like, Welbeck. Danny Welbeck's in the team.
Never let us down.
Maybe one or twice. He's inconsistent, that's the thing. But he's great when he was at Sunderland.
He's a proper England player, Danny Welbeck. That's the thing about Danny Welbeck, is he is an England player. England player first. And so you got to pick him.
How long was he at Sunderland for?
I think maybe a season and a half, or just a season.
Yeah.
But he was just on fire. Yeah. He was incredible. Mind you, he was playing in a Sunderland team, and he was clearly the best player in a red and white shirt. probably for a couple of years either side of that as well, when he wasn't even playing there. But I mean, yeah, he was so good, and you know, it was his first real chance to get a regular first team place, and you know, he really did well. Yeah, he was great back then. I just felt uninspired, like I did when I saw Jordan Henderson and Dyer in there. Yeah. I was like, fair enough, I can see why you picked them, but you know, it's not really that exciting, really.
I felt the same with Rashford, actually, because I don't think he's produced a lot this season. No, and considering that he's not been first choice for United, all right, he started in the cup final, but he hasn't had that same sort of raw power that he had when he first came in the side, in the United side, and when he played for England as well. I mean, like when he came on in Euro 2016, when we had an awful time, and he came on and he looked exciting, didn't he?
Although that could have just been because Tony Daly might have looked exciting. Know,
so we could have gone there.
Yeah. Oh, anybody dear. with a smattering of pace.
I never thought that Tony Daly would be mentioned on this podcast.
Come on, yes you did.
In all these episodes. Of course, what that did mean was that there's no room for Jadon Sancho.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was surprised. Or Ryan Sessegnon. I was very surprised by the reaction to some quarters that Ryan Sessegnon wasn't picked, because he's a Championship player, and I really think that, you know, he needs to play in the Premier League. And I was
a Championship player who wasn't Steve Ball. So
But he is only 17 as well.
Time's on his side. Yeah. Same with Jadon Sancho.
And
Sancho
has only just turned 18. Yeah. He's only played 12 games. The one goal and four assists in those 12 games, but two of those assists and one of those goals was in the one game, and that was against Leverkusen, who are Leverkusen.
Yeah, yeah.
They can have days where they're like going, oh, what's that? It's a ball. Oh, what do I do with it? And, you know, by that point, it's too late. Jadon Sancho's on your ass. But I think that it's way too soon for Sancho. Yeah. But he will be a regular. If he carries on the way he's going at Dortmund, he'll be a regular in the England setup for Euro 2020.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the fact that Rashford and Welbeck are in there. If you put a microphone in front of me, like I have right now, or if I put a microphone in front of myself, like I did here, right now.
This has turned into a Stuart Lee gig, isn't it?
I know, it's become suddenly exceptionally meta. I would say that Gareth Southgate knows these guys better than I do.
He knows exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. I think that's the issue. It's his first major tournament, and unlike other England coaches before him, Gareth Southgate has been involved in the England setup for quite some time beforehand. So, you know, I mean, he will know what these kids personally.
Yeah.
And we've got to back his judgment, at least until after the World Cup, and then
we can get the knives out. Of course,
get the knives out then.
And that's
course.
The beauty that's of this thing, works. Isn't it? That is how it works. All right, now that the squad's come out, did it make you a bit more excited?
Oh, definitely,
Where's your excitement levels right now, then? Yeah.
Well, I just think because there's so much youth in there, and Southgate's a young manager, and he's going to give it a kick on. So I think we'll go out of the group stage.
Go out of the group stage. Oh,
no, I think we'll get out of the groups.
You'll get out of the groups?
Yeah.
Second round exit?
Yeah, probably.
Second round exit.
Yeah, I reckon out of the groups and anything else is a bonus after that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a tough. I mean,
quarterfinals. I'm.
Well, you know, I mean, I will have to. We'll reserve judgment until. I mean, I would be disappointed if we couldn't get 4 points out of the first two fixtures and then go into that game against Belgium. Hope we're getting something. So it's not easy because Tunisia will be tough. I think Panama, frankly. I know, I think this is going to come back and bite me on the arse.
Why did you even say that?
But Panama are one of the lowest ranked teams in the tournament.
Do you know, this is the worst thing.
Oh, mate, just cut that shit out. Or stick it on the end. Take it all back.
I can go back. I can go back to 2010 and I can get all of that stuff about the USA and Algeria.
I was just having a flashback to 2010 and I was just thinking, Shut up.
Oh, dear, yeah.
But I mean, I think Tunisia will be very, very tough. And I think England will do well to get 4 points from those first two.
Hmm.
So it's going to be a really, really crunch game against Belgium. I'd like to be able to say, you know, we'll have 6 points by the time we get to Belgium, but I really don't know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Belgium, I think.
We're going to have them, 3-0.
I reckon we.
Isn't it? All this misplaced optimism is happening, isn't it?
That's not England, that's Belgium.
Yeah.
I think if any team in that group is more capable of shooting themselves in the foot than England, it's the Belgians.
Yeah, they're pretty good at that. Yeah.
If any time two teams could spontaneously combust as soon as they got onto the pitch.
Yeah. Do you think it would be the first game ever where both teams lose?
We could witness a minus score. If it was minus one, minus two. I mean, the thing, Belgium are like almost like a team that's managed by Roberto Martinez.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Well, we had so much fun talking about the England squad that we actually entirely forgot to talk about what else we were going to talk about. But that's okay, because that could wait for another week.
We'll hold that over for another week. Yeah, because it's still there's plenty more mileage in that.
What have we got coming out this week? We've got the playoffs coming out this week, and of course we've got the Champions League final.
The champions.
Both on Saturday. That's
both on. Well, the Championship playoff is on Saturday, and so is the Champions League final.
Yes.
There won't be a weekend box set.
We're done with that for the season.
Yeah, we're done with that. We might
come back during the World Cup if we feel like writing something down.
Yeah, we might
writing our thinkings down.
Yeah, we might get Jan to write up a load of stuff about the World Cup.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, he said nonchalantly, knowing that he wouldn't do a damn thing.
I intend to do no built-in football. I intend to do no such thing, but I'm happy to play along with this charade.
Charade.
We've known each other far too long now. You can actually read my thoughts.
That's what happens when our sweat mixes in the air, when we're breathing each other's fug in.
Oh.
Yeah. On that topic, pretty sure we could go now.
Well, that's it for this week. So for me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Tony Fellon, it's goodbye.
Goodbye, goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter at Sound of Football or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Are you going to get a new manager next season?
I sincerely hope not.
Dortmund might be, mightn't they?
Oh, Dortmund, yeah, Lucien Favre.
Is that stick on?
It's not that. It's almost stuck on.
Right, almost stuck
it's,
on.
It's stuck on. By something that they would get from Robert Dias.
Off a little video that you see at the end of the aisles.
Yeah.
Ooh, look at this.